Hi, this is Dr. Parker Wilson, and this is the topic of how do you love an enemy? How did Jesus and Buddha do it? So being a Buddhist in a predominantly Christian country, I'm often asked about any similarities between the historical figure of Christ and the historical figure of Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha. And one of the points of overlap was their teaching about enemies, and that you should love an enemy. And loving an enemy begins with developing psychological equanimity. Psychological equanimity means that you see no difference between a friend, an enemy, and a stranger. And we don't know really how Jesus accomplished this because our knowledge of Jesus' teachings are really quite succinct. There's just not a lot there. Fortunately, we know much more about Buddha's teachings. Buddha was around for 40 years after his enlightenment, 40 plus years after his enlightenment, and taught all of those years, and teachings were documented, so we know quite a bit about it. And I imagine this is probably how Christ did it as well. And every other holy man and yogi of world religions who has achieved a very realized mind has had to accomplish psychological equanimity. And it's also good for us, of course. If you want to be mentally healthy, if you want to be balanced, if you want to have some kind of happiness, stability, and clarity in your life, psychological equanimity is important and comes up in psychotherapy very, very regularly. The idea is this. You have a friend or a loved one, say. You have a stranger, and you have an enemy. So it's useful to actually kind of walk through this in your mind. It's kind of an on-the-spot little meditation. That you can imagine a loved one, someone that you feel very dearly towards. Someone for whom that when you look at their face, what spontaneously arises is love, caring, concern, a desire for their happiness, this kind of thing. And then picture sitting next to them an enemy. A disagreeable person, someone that you just don't like very much. And just by looking at them, spontaneously what arises in your mind is anger, irritation, fear, all kinds of a host of negative emotions. This is just not a person that you appreciate dealing with. You don't like them. Maybe you'd like to see them get hit by a bus, and you wouldn't shed any tears, that kind of thing. And then sitting next to that person is a complete stranger. Perhaps someone that you just saw during the day. You've never seen them before, and you'll likely never see them again. And you have no knowledge of them whatsoever. And so it's someone that for whom you really don't have any feeling, per se. Maybe there's some slight attraction or slight repulsion somehow. But nothing major, you know, nothing too serious. It's a total stranger. So you look at these three people, and you recognize what your reactions to these people have been. Emotionally, cognitively, you know, you've seen what arose in your mind when you were looking at these people. And then you begin to analyze it a little bit. You get a little space between you and everything that you were feeling about these people, and you start to notice things. For instance, your loved one. For you, this person is a loved one. But there are certainly other people in this world for whom your loved one is a disagreeable person. Maybe they said something or did something that was offensive to someone else. There are people who just don't like your loved one, who would consider your loved one to be disagreeable, even an enemy. Maybe they've harmed somebody. Maybe they've talked behind somebody's back. Maybe somebody thinks that they talked behind their back, but they still have the emotions, the disagreeable emotions towards your loved one. And for them, their label of disagreeable is just as real to them as your label of loved one is for you, one applied to the person. It seems real, it seems solid, it seems permanent. And then for most of the world, for 6.5 billion people on the planet, your loved one is a complete stranger. They don't know your loved one. They're not even aware that they're alive. The day of their birth and the day of their death will just be another day for the vast majority of the people of the world. This is also true. So for the vast majority of the world, your loved one is a stranger. They label your loved one a stranger, and that label seems very real to them. Very, very real, solid, and permanent. Now we move to your enemy. Now for you, this person is an enemy. They're disagreeable. Maybe they've said something, they've done something that was offensive or destructive or harmful to you in some way. And your label of enemy feels quite real. Your emotions feel quite real and solid and permanent. But if you slow down, take a deep breath, catch your breath a little bit, and look at it more closely, release your grasp on your label of enemy and your emotion of hatred and anger or irritation, just for a bit, you release your grasp on it a little bit, you can start to recognize that there are people in this world for whom your enemy is a loved one. That is somebody's mother or father, sister or brother, son or daughter. That is someone's lover. That is someone's friend. That's someone's best friend. Your enemy undoubtedly has people who depend upon him or her, and they love and admire him. Maybe he's a teacher for some. And for all of these people, their label of loved one is just as real to them, maybe even more real. It's just as real as your label of enemy is to you. It feels just as solid and just as permanent. And then again, for most of the entire world and the 6.5 billion people on it, your enemy, the one you have such intense emotions about, have such intense passions about, is a complete stranger. So that the day of their birth and the day of their death is just another day. Nothing special. Ordinary. When they're gone, it'll be as if they were never here. They don't know their name, they've never seen them, they never will see them. They're a complete stranger. And the label of complete stranger feels very real to most of the world. You know? They have no emotion about it one way or the other, really. And it seems natural. That's the way it should be to them. It feels right. Now you move to the stranger that you pictured. The complete stranger. For you, this person is a stranger. Then the day that they were born is unimportant to you. You don't know them. You don't know their name. You don't know what they do. You don't know anything about them. And you never will. And that's fine. You know, it's not like you're rushing to get to know them. It's not a big deal. You meet strangers all the time, pass them by on the street. Whatever. But for a group of other people, the person that you see and label as a stranger is a loved one. That is someone's father, someone's mother, someone's lover, someone's friend, someone's brother or sister, son or daughter. They are cared about deeply by other human beings. There are human beings who depend on this person. There are human beings for whom, if this person were to die, it would shatter and annihilate their world. They would be in grief for months and years over that. And for these people, the label of loved one feels solid, permanent, real, just like your label of stranger feels to you. And then again, for this stranger, this person you label a stranger, they have enemies. They are seen by others as being disagreeable. Maybe they've said something or done something that was harmful or difficult that hurt somebody else. Maybe that person's holding a grudge and they label your stranger an enemy, disagreeable. They have negative feelings towards this person. And for these people, their label of enemy feels quite real, quite serious, quite permanent, quite stable. Now, you look back on all these three people that you pictured. And again, look at their faces. And you notice if your emotions have changed. And if they have changed, in what way did they change? And then you remind yourself that oftentimes in your life, these roles switch and shift and change all the time. Friend, foe, and stranger. Come and go, shift, ebb and flow, changing all the time. For instance, when I was in grammar school, I had a bully. This bully made my life a living hell for about 2-3 weeks. He would just torment me after school and follow me home and just kind of made my existence real miserable. I would lay in bed. I was probably 10 or something, 9, 8, 9, 10. I would lay in bed and have fantasies about killing him and his death and victory over him and all these kind of things that children do. And one day he was bullying me and tormenting me, and I decided I'd had enough of it. It would be better to get my ass kicked than to continue living like this. So I decided to stand up to him, and that's exactly what I did. And he backed down. And we ended up becoming friends. We ended up becoming very good friends, actually. So that 6 months later, he was one of my best friends. And now I'm 37 years old. It's, you know, God knows how many years. I have no idea where he is. I have no idea who he is. I don't even know if he's still alive. I don't have the slightest idea. And to be honest, I don't really care that much. It's just one of those many relationships that we have in life that we just kind of move on from, and they move on from us, and you know, we go into other things, and they're forgotten about and left behind. And so just even in this example, you can see how things shift and change. This person started as an enemy. And then they became a loved one, a dear friend, and then they became a complete stranger. All in the same lifetime, all in a period of 20 years. Right? Not even a lifetime, just 20 years. Now reflect on your own life. Have you had strangers that have become loved ones? If you're married or have a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whatever, weren't they a stranger at some point to you? Of course they were. And haven't you had loved ones who have become strangers? Hasn't this also happened? Have you ever had an enemy that's become a loved one? What about a loved one who's become an enemy? Who's betrayed you or hurt you in some way? And so we can see that these things ebb and flow. They come and go. They shift. Our labels are not permanent. Despite how it might seem to us, they are not. And when we believe in the permanency and the inherent reality of the way we label things, we get into a lot of trouble doing that. We believe our labels are inherent and permanent, real, reflecting some kind of absolute reality, and this is just clearly not the case. And because we believe they're real and permanent, we latch onto and attach ourselves to all of our reactions to the people, places, and things that we have labels about. And we get very fundamental and very righteous and very intense. And it's all a misperception. It's all a complete misperception. How did Jesus love his enemies? Because he saw no difference between his enemies and his loved ones and the strangers that he met in the street of Galilee. Saw no difference at all. They were all the same to him. They were all his children. I think they were all loved ones. He saw his enemies under the influence of afflictive, negative, destructive emotions, under the influence of ignorance and misperception. Just as he said when he was being tortured by the Romans, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." In essence, if they could understand what they were doing, if they could see what they were doing, they clearly would not do it, but they cannot see. Buddha said something very similar. He said, "We sleepwalk through our lives." Sleepwalk. And that's true, in my experience at least. And so, if you begin to consider these things, psychological equanimity and how to develop it, you start to release your grasp on things. Here's another example about the relativity of our labels and such. Tyra Banks. I really like Tyra Banks. She's one of my favorite celebrities to look at. I think she's really quite beautiful. And so, I would label her a 10, in my opinion. Now, I could pull in 10 other guys and show them the same picture of Tyra Banks that I was looking at and ask them for their labels of her, 1 to 10. You know, how gorgeous is she? And one of them might say a 3, one of them might say a 5, one of them might say a 7, one of them might say 0, you know, or a 1. Now, the question is, who's right? Who has the permanent, inherently existing truth here? Whose label is inherently permanent and correct? Well, of course, no one's is. This is a matter of opinion. It's relative. It's completely relative. Now, if I gave her a 10, the guy who gave her a 1 because I believe in the reality of my label, the inherent, permanent reality of my label, the truth of it, I might get kind of pissed off with this guy. I might think he doesn't know what he's talking about. I might become quite angry with him. In fact, he and I might get into a fist fight. He'd become equally angry with me, thinking, I don't know what I'm talking about, right? The next thing you know, you've got a fist fight. This is how wars begin. This is how most human wars begin, at least in my analysis of it. It's really nothing more complex than that. We take very relative things, opinions, judgments, thoughts, emotions, fantasies, memories, that we believe in the reality of these things, and when other people don't meet our expectations and they don't see the truth that we see, the permanent inherent truth, well, they got to go. We've got to do something about these people. Right? They need to be converted to our way of thinking. If we can't do that, maybe we'll just kill them. Right? This is how much of human conflict begins. And it's just so unnecessary. Here's another example. It's so unnecessary, and it's really mentally unhealthy. It cultivates conflict. It cultivates tension, stress, anxiety, fear, feeling isolated, feeling abandoned, mistreated. All of these emotions become cultivated when we really invest in the reality, the absolute, inherent, and permanent reality of our labels. This is why you see guys like Jesus and Buddha and all the yogis and all the holy men, Gandhi and Martin Luther King, all straying away from absolutism, straying away from dogma and fundamentalism. If you go into the ground that you have an absolute truth to tell the world, you're in trouble. You really are quite in trouble at that point. Because the first thing you're going to run up against is someone who disagrees with your absolute and inherent and permanent truth. And you're going to find yourself in a conflict, and it's never going to end. And the more you do things, the easier they become to do. Everything gets easier with repetition, and conflict becomes a habit. And then peace and happiness are impossible to find. Very, very difficult. And you become an angry, conflicted person. It's just impossible to feel peaceful. So, last example would be a pool table. So, like, I got a pool table, I'm going to scatter all the balls out on the pool table. And I'm going to put 10 different people around the pool table, you know, at different points around the table, and ask them to describe what they see. Now, we're all going to have different perceptions of this object. Now, notice it's the exact same object. The exact same object that we're looking at. The balls aren't moving, the table's not moving. We're all looking at the exact same thing. Yet we will have 10 very different perceptions. Now, who's correct? Here's one more. This one comes from Galileo in physics, this example. Say you've got a train. This is the relativity of physics that Einstein worked with to come to his greater realizations about relativity. Let's say you got a train. You got a guy on a train platform. He's standing still. There's a train that's passing by the platform through the station. As it passes through, he sees in one of the windows in the club car, there's another man sitting down. He's being served a cup of tea. The train is traveling at 40 miles an hour. Now, the man on the platform and the man inside the train are looking at the cup of tea. They lock eyes on it simultaneously. The man on the platform sees the tea traveling at 40 miles an hour. The man inside the train sees the cup of tea traveling at 0 miles per hour. Who's correct? Whose perception is absolute? Whose perception is right? Whose perception has permanent reality to it? That they should really attach and invest a lot of emotion and cognition and energy into defending the reality of their perception. Who's correct? So, if you found this interesting, I'm glad. This is some of the underlying concept that psychotherapy is based upon, so is mindfulness training, and developing and cultivating psychological equanimity. It's a very, very eminently useful, practical thing to do in this human life. It can only produce balance and clarity and peace and happiness and meaning in your life. It can only produce those things. Not capable of doing harm. So if you found this interesting, I invite you to please consult me. Give me a call or send me an email. I talk to people all the time. Glad to talk to you. And I'm glad that you've tuned in.